Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpoga. This evening we talk about the Horn and East African changing political landscape. And with us tonight is Fred Omolo. He's a Kenyan journalist. He joins us by phone from Kisumu. Good evening, Fred.
Good evening, Douglas.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yes, also joining us is regular panelist Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst. He joins us as usual from Durban, South Africa. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Thank you very much, and good evening, Fred.
Good evening, Suleiman. Thanks.
Yes, gentlemen, as I said, our topic tonight, we're looking at the changing landscape in the East African and Horn region of Africa. I don't know where to start. There are elections upcoming in DRC. They have had issues. Ethiopia is trying to mend fences with Eritrea and Somalia. In Uganda, they have their own political issues. So where do we start? First of all, Fred, how do you see the landscape? There seems to be something moving, but not quite clear what it is.
Yeah, it's true. There's a lot happening around here. Ethiopia is undergoing a very strange and positive transformation, Ethiopia and Eritrea, South Sudan as well. Of course, Kenya, things started moving in a very surprising direction last March when the two antagonists came together for their famous or infamous handshake. And then now we had Uganda just quiet. Then suddenly things just exploded because of a by-election. And now we have Ugandans on the streets, something that they rarely did in the past. So there's some positive change in the air going on. And really on the surface, just looking at it very anecdotally, what I can probably say is there is a new infusion of younger and, let's say, more informed or sensible people moving into government, you see. Mm-hmm. The old people who used to run governments and systems in the old way are just dying out because of age, because of natural attrition. If you look at Kenya, for example, the last 1 year has been really incredible. There's a lot of independence era luminaries and individuals such as Ken Matiba, such as William Olentimama, John Keane, Nicholas Biwott, all of them have died in the last 1 year, right? And all of them represented a particular way of doing things. Now, if you look at Ethiopia's case, for example, it has the best example that I can give. The government there just at some point realized, you know what? We can't be a minority government suppressing the entire country, and particularly the majority community, which is the Oromo. So Desalegn, who I think is the last prime minister, he just accepted the facts and the information on the ground as it were. This is the reality. This is how serious countries run. They look at the interests of the majority, but they take care of their minorities. We will not move until we accept that fact. And he accepted it, and all of a sudden, a new prime minister is there. All those old hostilities, we don't even understand why. There's some young people don't even understand, like 50% of the population don't understand why there are hostilities between Ethiopia and Eritrea. And those are the realities that are now starting to sink into people's minds.
I see.
In Kenya here, Uhuru Kenyatta had a very, very contentious and controversial re-election last year. And he adopted the old way of handling this problem. But once he had this issue solved and he was sworn in as head of state, he realized he's running a country that is broken down the middle. The economy is in total tatters. So are you going to continue governing and moving ahead as though nothing happened? If half of the population is not participating, you need taxes to pay debts to the Chinese and to all these people and to do infrastructural projects. You need a legacy project. How are you going to manage that? To hell with the old way of doing things. So he said, you know what? Let me look for my antagonist. Let me reunite the country. Let me start doing things in a different way. It hasn't changed everything at the same all at once, but it has drastically reduced the ethnic and emotional tensions that existed in the body politic of Kenya.
I see. Suleiman, Fred has touched on, has given us a rough summary of what's going on. What's your take?
Actually, I agree with Fred 100%. The region has remained fragile. And in addition to what Fred is saying, it seems the generation which we have had has failed to rebrand itself. It has failed to move with the time. Many of them have been caught. They have been caught up. You find that now, in the whole region, almost, let's say even the whole continent, there is a disconnect between the leaders and the aspiration of the people they lead. The way our brother said, the young generation could not understand why the Ethiopia has to be on a war front perpetually. For what reason? The young generation in southern Sudan cannot understand why the country has to be on a war front perpetually. The young generation in Uganda cannot understand why the politics between the opposition and the ruling parties, they have to be on a protracted collision situation forever and ever. Why people have to die every time there is any form of election, small or big, they don't understand. So much that many of the young generation have come to the conclusion that the ruling elite now, which has dominated power, is looking for nothing other than enriching themselves. That is why, as my brother said, in all this country, you are seeing a new generation of leaders coming up without the traditional linkages which have characterized most of our politics in Africa and in the region. Worse still, even in DRC, where we are going for election, still the same situation. The politicians, the ruling elite, is failing to get down to the reality on the ground. They are in the traditional politics where the winner take all, where the winner dictates everything. The winner doesn't listen to anybody because he has got the mandate to lead, therefore leads according to what he wishes. I think that is the cancer which has penetrated our politics for a long time and which is beginning to change. But as Fred has said, we don't know what direction is taking, especially given the way Uganda erupted within seconds. Now everything seems to be going in different directions.
I see. Both of you mentioned these hotspots. And as we know, there are countries that affect the regions. For instance, in the South African Community region, if South Sudan keeps on fire, fighting perpetual, as you say, and things don't go where in Uganda, that affects the South African Community region. The DR Congo elections,
yes,
depending on how they go, Congo is a huge country that affects almost those countries neighboring it. So does Ethiopia, by pulling it off somehow, maybe it could turn around Eritrea and Somalia. So Fred, let's look at these South Sudan, Congo, and Ethiopia, the role they play in the greater region.
First of all, DRC, DRC, which I can probably call the headquarters of impunity in Africa, they really surprised me. Kabila really surprised me recently when he just decided not to vie. And the reality is that there's nothing new he has to offer, number one. Number two, there's nothing new he has to offer the world at large, which has intensified its plundering of that country. So it was probably the realization of the unsustainability of this situation which pushed him and probably his close aides, advisors, and even external forces to have him step down. Now, as Suleiman just pointed out, we don't know the direction that this will take. Will a new regime come back that will just intensify the plundering and the messing up of that country? We do not know. However, what is the effect of stability in the DRC? The DRC, not just physically, but is literally the heart of Africa. If you have order in the DRC, you have order in all the surrounding areas. you don't have people like Joseph Kony hiding around and running around in the Congo forest. You don't have all these South African arms dealers and blood diamond dealers doing their business in there. And reducing or eliminating impunity in the DRC really kills a lot of impunity, the chain of impunity that moves all the way to the Indian Ocean, moves all the way to the Atlantic Ocean on the other side, and all the ports in between. If you look at, for example, I had a discussion with a few years back. I had a discussion with Charles Onyango Obbo. He's a Ugandan artist, a Ugandan journalist who was based here in Kenya for a long time, and he asked me, "What is the interest that the major powers still have in the DRC?" And he told me, "It will surprise you, but it's not even all the minerals and everything. It is the River Congo itself. Because the River Congo, if it was dammed and turned into a hydroelectricity generating a resource, it could be the most powerful hydroelectro-productivity resource anywhere on Earth, right?" So all these realities put into context, bring in what is now happening with Joseph Kabila and the opposition there and Bemba flying back in. If that country stabilizes, however little that stability may be, it reduces a lot of impunity. It reduces a lot of involvement, such as we had in that terrible civil war where Rwanda, Uganda, and all these other people were participating. Elements of that war are still going on, and elements of impunity still live on. For example, the Interahamwe are still there in the DRC. If you have a stable government there, they can't continue to hide in that country anymore. They will face the ICC, which is what they're supposed to have happened years ago. So in my view, I think that however little the progress will come in the DRC, we will definitely see a reduction in impunity, a reduction in insecurity and corruption. The other you spoke about was it South Sudan?
South Sudan and Ethiopia.
South Sudan, I really don't trust those two gentlemen. I don't think they are serious with this new deal. So with that, I will reserve my comment and probably give them 6 months to 1 year before I really... I really don't trust Salva Kiir and Riek Machar. I don't think they are serious about this. And they are still, unfortunately, they are still surrounded by their Bush generation, the people who fought with them in the war. And you can see how those groups of people can do damage whenever they continue to surround a leader. We have the example of Mugabe in Zimbabwe and other places. So I would reserve my comments as far as South Sudan is concerned. I still think these are the very early stages, and the South Sudan has a tendency to go to war at the smallest of excuses. Within an hour, you hear hundreds already dead. So I think that thing is still very, very fragile. It could go either way. It could collapse just like the others.
I see. Suleiman, just before you give your opinion, let me just remind our listeners that you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight we're talking about the changing political landscape in the Horn and East African region. Our panelists are Fred Omulo, a Kenyan journalist, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga, here in Washington. Suleiman, do you share Fred's general view there?
Actually, Fred has said almost everything I could have said. But the saddest part of it is that we don't know whether to cry or to mourn for our continent. Because the way Fred has said, the sick man of Africa, DRC, is a sleeping giant. If at all it were to stabilize, it can, the way he has said, if the River Congo, if the Ingas are to be built, they can electrify the whole of the continent. The minerals which are just down there. DRC can be the richest country on this continent. But our politics, the African politics, even right now as they go for election, there is still a lot of uncertainty because of the way the dictators have disabled our countries. Kabila has divided the country, has disabled the country. He holds the country at ransom from 2016, and then at the last minute, he gives away that he's not going to stand. When the opposition is totally disorganized, when so many conditions are not in place which can facilitate a free and fair election, but to begin with, he takes the opposition by surprise. They don't have time to reorganize themselves. They don't have time to critically look at the playing field, to critically negotiate the leveling of the playing field. So many of their leaders, many are in prison, others are in exile. The electoral rules are not yet touched. Then, apart from that, they are being forced. They are being enticed because they feel the population is tired. It can be able to elect a new dispensation, but on a skewed playing field, there is little they can do. It will end up the way it ended in Kenya. It will end up the way it ended in Uganda. It will end up the way it has recently ended up in Zimbabwe, with the unfinished business, where all the sacrifices which the population has done is being driven away by reinstating the same regime coming to power, but having changed the faces in the office. So it is really a very, very difficult time for the continent. We have some hope, and we can still have some hope. But the way my brother has said, it's very difficult to tell. Because as he has said, for the Southern Sudan, for them, any time they'll be fighting. They had put their guns on each other's heads. They don't have confidence in one another. No one knows whether they will ever have confidence into one another. DRC, Uganda is lacking in the steps. It has been looting the country. It has been a factor in DRC. It does not allow this country to stabilize Uganda together with Rwanda. So we don't know whether DRC can make it when it has got vultures who are lacking over their heads. That is Uganda and Rwanda. Unless the political situation in Uganda intensifies against Museveni so that he can be busy internally, then we can have hope of having something in DRC. Other than that, if at the current state the DRC opposition goes into election, in the current state of affairs, they are likely to end up like Zimbabwe.
I see. Now, talking of these regions and the continent as far as whole, what's the role, or what should the leaders there, or their regional bodies? ECOWAS at one time tried to rectify things in the West, but in the East African region, the Horn, there has not been a regional body that can come in, prevail among some of these leaders, and make sure those countries are stable. Beginning with you, Fred, what should be the role, or what should be the role, or all of these other leaders who have the semblance of democracy, or the regional bodies that, like the African community, for instance? You can't have a community of nations where one leader is life president and another is elected properly. I mean, that can't work.
Exactly my point. The whole can only be as strong as the individual parts. It's like a chain. We are only as strong as our weakest link. And if you have some weak link that is influential, for example, you have a weak link like Angola, which is before the exit of Dos Santos, was almost a basket case, but it had a very strong economic power. You have a member like Nigeria that is a resource, a big resource, a mineral resource center that has the most corrupt civil service in the continent. You have all these people as your members, and you expect forward movement. Take a look at the EU, the European Union, for example, or the Union of the Americas, for example. When they do trade deals, it is because each and every member to that trade deal or to that pact, whether it is a trade or immigration or what have you, each and every member has already an existing and functional system of government that contributes positively, such that there are checks and balances. If you mess around as far as politics is concerned, you want to rig elections, there are other checks and balances within the trade area or within the immigration area or within the sanctions list that can be applied. And you are brought back to book and you're brought back to heel and you behave yourself. Now look at the AU. Have you ever seen the AU, for example, putting sanctions on a country like the Central African Republic when the government there starts to misbehave, or Mauritania, when they retain African slaves from West Africa in this day and age, and they are still members? You have some of our countries that are not democracies. They are virtually monarchies, you know? So at the end of the day, you are only as strong as the members that make you up. And that is why all these bodies that we have are weak. We've been having COMESA operating in this area for the last two decades, for example. And COMESA, for example, when you look at the rules on sugar, recently we had a terrible scandal about poisonous sugar in Kenya, imported by well-connected people, connected to the political class, connected to the opposition. We had a terrible scandal there, and there, the funny thing is that we have COMESA safeguards, which are now almost 10 years old, more than 10 years old, about how sugar should flow in this region. If those safeguards were followed, we would not have the kinds of problems that we have here in Kenya. But no one gives a damn about them. And whenever the deadline comes up, Kenya always calls for an extension. It's been calling for an extension. I think this is the fifth extension over the last 10 years for those safeguards to be put in place. Why? So that the sugar barons and the political elite can continue benefiting from cheap sugar from Brazil, which is unfit for human consumption, right? So Kenya is an economic hub in this region, in East Africa. But we have a rotten leadership, so we can trash anything that COMESA tells us to do as long as we have a few rotten eggs here within who want to benefit from loopholes. You get what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. you're only as good as the individual countries, and the individual countries still have a long way to go.
I see.
That's why ECOWAS, that's why SADC, that's why the AU, they're just, you know, gatherings of dictators and other jokers who don't achieve much.
I see. Suleiman, you think that's correct?
I agree with Fred. Generally, we have got very weak leadership on the continent. In this regional organization, there is nothing which can happen. For example, in SADC, after Ian Khama has retired, now you can't see anybody with some principles, because yes, they are insisting on elections in Zimbabwe. They were insisting on free and fair elections in Zimbabwe. They were pretending to put the leadership on task. They are pretending to engage the leadership in DRC. They were pretending to put pressure on the leadership in Lesotho. But they don't follow up the necessary reforms. I mean, how could they have allowed the elections to go ahead in Zimbabwe without credible electoral reforms? Why were they in a hurry to allow the status quo to conduct elections? You could see that the elections will be disputed. Don't they have standards that in order for them to have an acceptable election, let us have an electoral commission which is composed of even people from the opposition? Let us have the people having confidence in the system which is going to be used. But they all just whitewash most of these things. They talk; it's just the rhetoric, mm-hmm. but they don't go down to the reality on the ground. Even in East Africa, we had hope of President Kenyatta. We thought he was young, he was dynamic. We thought he was going to lead the region. But Kenyatta succumbed to the pressures of old men like Museven. He leaves Museven to drag everybody in mud. He goes, he's in Southern Sudan, encouraging wars. He's in DRC, looting. He's everywhere. Now, the only hope you can see in that region is Dr. Bill in Ethiopia. For example, if you had people like him, about three of them, and they have got principles, and they stand the way Kama used to stand on principles. Kama was the only president in SADC who stood in 2005 and said Mugabe has to stand down. He has lost election. We need a new dispensation in Zimbabwe. Because there were many, including South Africans who are supposed to be the godfathers of democracy, they went on the side of Mugabe, and Kama was outsmarted out. So our regional organizations themselves are made up of rusted leadership itself, rusted and weak leadership. So they cannot help the region. That is why the region is so unstable. That is why it is so fragile, as we have said from the beginning. We don't know even where we are going. Things are just happening from all directions.
Yeah, but some people say we're almost out of time. But some people say, with the number of youth, young people outnumbering the older generation, changes in the air. Briefly, Suleiman. Briefly, very brief, 10 seconds.
It was very encouraging for the Kenyan population to rise up to help the people of Uganda after the violence and the brutalization of the population after the elections in Arua. It is so encouraging that now the Kenyans they are taking the initiative from their leaders. They are rejecting the dictatorship in Uganda, and they are encouraging the youth in Uganda to continue fighting. That is a good sign. If you can get the population in East Africa rising up, and we throw away the rusted leadership, maybe we can get a new beginning for the region. Let's also pray for DRC. Let's hope that Bemba can be able to galvanize the others, the Katumi and others, and they are able to make a change, not to continue with the Kabila regime, which has destroyed the country.
I see. Fred, 10 seconds. The youth.
In my view, even if the change is there because of the youth coming up, it would be better if the older generation shepherds them into that change and creates the structures so that they don't inherit a vacuum. You inherit chaos.
I see.
And the youth are very good at chaos.
Well, gentlemen, unfortunately, we're out of time, and that wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Fred Omulo, a Kenyan journalist, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
The pleasure is ours.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, and we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.vonews.com. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@vonews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bunganyan in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, let's be upfront.
There's a lot to talk about.
We need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
Upfront is a show where we look at issues that affect Africa's youth,
giving you an opportunity to express yourself as you connect with other youth around the continent.
In this interconnected world, we share a destiny. So let us share our solutions to issues like unemployment,
education reform,
elections,
free speech,
and many others.
Nothing is off the table.
Nothing is off the table.
Absolutely nothing is off the table.
It's Upfront, Wednesdays at 1730 UTC, Saturday at 1900 UTC,
and Sunday at 1930 UTC.
Right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA News.